Good afternoon. I call this meeting of House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect it's 1:05 p.m. on Thursday, March 8th. And present are Representative Ortiz, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Wilson, Representative Vice Chair Guerra, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Tilton, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Thompson, myself, Co-Chair Seaton. Remind everybody about the cell phones before we start. And this afternoon, we are again taking up amendments to the operating budget bills. This afternoon, I plan to finish the special appropriation amendments, the single judiciary, the University of Alaska, the Department of Revenue amendments, and then we'll go to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs amendments and take up the remaining amendments in that order. So I want to get through the language amendments today, so that will help legislative legal services draft the final budget bills. To finish up the special appropriation amendments, we'll start with HSAP 25, which is on page 52 of the Legislative Finance Amendment Report. And so if we go to page 52. And so if everybody has that, I will move HSAP 25. And thank you. This amendment adds a new section 19D that capitalizes the Disaster Relief Fund with an estimated $6.2 million from the balances of several funds. These sources were identified as available funds in the governor's budget amendments submitted February 13th. Alternative Energy Conservation Revolving Loan Fund, $2.7 million, that's DGF. Mining Loan Fund is $200,900, which is DGF. Unincorporated Community Capital Project Matching Grant Fund, $646,200, which again is DGF. Municipal Capital Project Matching Grant Fund, $253,500, which is DGF. And Investment Loss Trust Fund, which is $2.3 million, which is UGF. And from FY14 through FY18 to date, $51.5 million has been appropriated into the Disaster Relief Fund. Over the roughly 4.5 year period, the average annual expenditure has been $11.4 million. $2 million UGF is already included in the budget in Section 19C. This amended increases the FY19 capitalization to $8.2 million, which is closer to the annual average expenditure. The current fund balance is only $1.5 million. HB 321, the supplemental bill, includes an additional $4 million of capitalization in FY18 as we head into this spring breakup season. And they're just discussion from the committee.
Thank you. So on SAP 25, where we're doing all these loan transfers, so are these, have they just been stagnated for a long time? Just a little bit more information on what's actually, because I was looking for backup and I didn't see any like we had yesterday where it showed how much, you know, was in the fund, how much loans that were out, and then what the balance was, and maybe is there a backup page I'm just missing?
We can bring the basic forward.
Through the chair, for the record, my name is Lacey Sanders, fiscal analyst for Legislative Finance Division. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, there should have been an attachment, and we can, we were provided with a report from the Office of Economic Development on each of the revolving loan funds, and I can provide you and the committee a summary on that loan fund, the two that are being identified. Regarding the mining revolving loan fund, there are no current active loans in this fund, and they have one, to give you more detail, it has one remaining foreclosed property that they're collecting on, and they have identified this as available. And regarding the alternative energy revolving loan fund, there are also no outstanding loans, and the governor's office identified this as being able to utilize.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up, Reverend Wilson.
And maybe this may be to you instead, Mr. Chair. So, first of all, I guess we'll get the information. Are you draining most of these down to zero, the ones that don't have any outstanding loans, and is it your intent on those type that don't have any active loans to just get rid of those funds altogether, or are you leaving enough in there so that if somebody would qualify underneath them that we would still be loaning money?
And, on February 13th, the governor's amendments were submitted, and he identified these as available funds. We're using those. Ms. Sanders, do you have the ending balances on any of these, or are these all zeroed out?
Representative Seaton, I do have the balance of these, and the language is to utilize the unexpended and unobligated balance on these loan funds and drain these two specific loan funds, the alternative energy and the mining revolving loan fund. So no future loans would be made from these two programs.
And what is the follow-up?
Reverend Wilson.
And if we could just at some point find out whether or not we can just zero balance any of them out, or whether or not it would take statute change to really get rid of those funds altogether, that would be helpful.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the language will drain the loan funds, and I'm very confident that a statutory change would be needed to remove these from the books.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions, discussion on these, Representative Galsdorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this would be for Lacey. It was my understanding that with the $2 million increment in the FY19 budget and the supplemental request, that they would get to the point where they needed to be. Aren't we overcapitalizing this fund at this point?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, the administration's position was to increase the fund balance to $5 million. This would bring the fund balance obviously higher than that. Looking at historical trends, it is a very low balance. And because disasters are so unpredictable, the amendment put forward capitalizes it further. So in anticipation of spring disasters and future disasters, being available to have money if those happen.
And Representative Kawasaki, I just wanted to reiterate that FY14 through 18, the fund was capitalized in 14 with $32.5 million, and that's been used up over time. And the other thing is we're trying to prevent supplementals from, if we underfund this, we will get supplementals. The average use per year is $1.5 million. We're trying to lessen the anticipated supplementals that we would receive in the next fiscal year.
Okay.
Are there further questions? Representative Wilson, I believe you had the address. Do you maintain that?
Just one comment. I'm just concerned that if we have $11.5 million, we're using other funds at this point and not really addressing the issue where we're going to start paying for it. But at this time, I will remove my objection.
Is there any further objections? Seeing no further objection, SAP 25 has been adopted. And
Mr. Chair, I move SAP 26.
Object.
We had an objection from Representative Grant.
Guttenberg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd actually like to offer, first, before I get into it, a conceptual amendment. That would be a conceptual amendment 1 to SAP 26 that would allow the balance to be used over the course of FY 19 and 20, spread the $416,000 over two fiscal years, not just one.
A brief of these. Okay, we're back on the record, and I'm going to object so that we have discussion on this amendment. And I would like to...
On the conceptual, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, on the conceptual.
Okay, excellent.
And so I draw everybody's attention to the amendment page itself, and that was line 21 on page 1. And that would be adding in June 30th, 2020, after June 30th, 2019.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I just want, this is about as far in the conceptual language as we want to get. So I want to have everybody realize where it's going to go. It's not on the spreadsheets that we've been mostly working off of. It's in the actual amendment. So is there any confusion or clarification that anybody wants to make of that? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection to the conceptual amendment. We are on 26, and you want to explain the amendment,
yes.
Representative Pruitt?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I appreciate it. So what the conceptual amendment does is it takes money that has been appropriated over the course, specifically in 2014, it was appropriated in the Office of the Governor, and allows it to then be utilized for CACFA, which is the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. The intent of the initial money that is has not been fully utilized included Arctic policy leadership and economic development projects, including oil and gas development. What it's essentially been utilized for is the climate change commission that the governor has been working on. So it's kind of been working almost against the oil and gas development discussion. We've had a lot of conversation, I think, that's been in the public about the initial individual who was hired, and of course being flown up from Seattle, creating more carbon emissions to be able to talk about not using carbon emissions. And so what I felt here was probably a better utilization of this money is instead of dealing with something that is more of a federal and international conversation and something that I think Alaskans have said, felt that's probably not the best utilization of our money, that instead one area that we probably need to be talking about the most. Everyone says that there's a favorable administration for Alaska on Alaska issues, lands, et cetera. I completely agree. That's why we should have the CACFA in place, because if there is acceptance to the ideas and the concepts that from which we are presenting, if there is that a very favorable attitude towards Alaska back in D.C., all the more reason that we should have our Citizens Advisory Commission out there talking about why certain things should be addressed or certain things should be considered during this time frame. So I would ask for your support as we take money that I think probably many Alaskans felt probably could have been used in a different manner and probably more effective, and put it in a place where I think a lot of Alaskans feel is a good place to have it, especially right now with the favorable administration. So with that, ask for your support.
Thank you. And we'll ask Sean Henderson and Guy Bell to come.
Sean Henderson. For the record.
Would you tell us the agency position after you introduce yourself for the record?
Yes. Sean Henderson, Office of the Governor, Director of Administrative Services. Mr. Chair, I would like to speak on behalf of the Governor's office and oppose this reappropriation. And the reason for our opposition is that simply that this Arctic policy funding is the primary funding source for the Alaska Climate Change Strategy and Climate Action for Alaska Leadership Team. On October 31st, I believe, 2017, the governor signed Administrative Order 289 establishing the Alaska Leadership Team to advise the governor on critical and timely actions to address climate change challenges that safeguard Alaska. The order calls for state departments to review previous work on climate change and identify immediate action responses that we can take. The admin order also zeroes in on climate initiative and addresses four key action areas: mitigation, research, response, and adaptation. The initial action plan is due to the governor September 1, 2018. And after that report is submitted, additional work will transpire. So I respectfully ask that that funding remain part of the Arctic funding policy.
Any questions for the administration? Reverend Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So CAFTA has to do with federal overreach. Isn't part of the problem sometimes with climate control is federal overreach?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if it entails overreach.
Follow-up?
Representative Wilson.
So could you please be more specific on how the $416,000 is currently allocated? Is it all to personnel? Is it to travel? What is the breakdown of that $416,000?
That is through the chair, Representative Wilson. That is the remaining balance of approximately $416,000. It has not been designated for any particular purpose other than for use for the Alaska leadership team. I can tell you historically, since the appropriation the monies were appropriated, I can tell you where they've been used, if that would be helpful.
I'd like to know what monies have been used in and for how much in each personnel travel, that breakdown.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I show that the initial appropriation was $900,000.
Mr. Chairman, what year would that be?
And that was in 2014, I believe. And since that time to date, there has been $95,857 for personal services. Travel, there has been $71,633. Services, $267,489. And commodities, $5,803. For a total expended of $440,782.
And a follow-up?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm assuming in FY14 that the original funding, do you know what the original funding was to go to in 14? Because this is kind of basically a reappropriation. I mean, what were the ideas? I mean, the whole thing with climate control, all that's recent. And this money is going back all the way to 14.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair to Representative Wilson. I cannot say specifically what that was assigned appropriate for in 2014. I can do follow-up work and bring that to the body if needed. I can generally say it was for Arctic policies and project analysis.
And one more follow-up?
Representative Wilson.
And since you've already got a lot of things in place, you don't know where the $416,000 may or may not be used. But if we were to use this $416,000 over here for CACTA, would you not still be able to, in the governor's office, use the contingency fund to make up the difference?
Through the chair to Representative Wilson, I can't really say what that contingency fund, again, would be used for. I think the purpose of that fund was for shortfalls in certain areas and to be used as needed for possibly emergencies or other actions. It's the governor's fund. I really can't speak to what it may be used for.
But, Mr. Chairman, that wasn't the question, if I can clarify.
Representative Wilson.
So, as you just said, it's used for shortfalls and as needed. My question was, could the contingency fund be utilized if the governor so chose to make up this $416,000? Is there anything that would prevent the fund from being utilized here, like any rules, regulations?
Through the chair, not to my knowledge, Representative Wilson.
That's my understanding, too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Question, Representative Pruitt?
And I want to make sure that I'm correct when I make the statement. The leadership team can are they all Alaskans on that leadership team?
Through the chair to the Representative Pruitt. I'd have to verify that. I think, to my best of my knowledge, I think they are. There may be one member that is not, but I can't say for certain. I would have to follow up with that for you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
We're on the amendment. This one doesn't have an amendment to the amendment, right?
Yes, it does.
The amendment to the amendment was the objection was removed, and that was just to spread it over 2 years.
Thanks, Chair. I don't see the spending of $416,000 on an agency that really has no power as a wise use of money. This is not an agency. This is a state entity we created to look at and watch federal laws. We have a senator. We have two senators. We have a congressman. We have an office of the governor's staff in Washington, D.C. To spend money to just watch federal laws that we can't change as a state legislature, when we already have four representatives in Washington, D.C. who do that, who can have an impact, I just don't think it's a wise use of money, I would oppose the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So from my recollection, in 17, the House didn't fund this, the Senate did, and then the governor vetoed it. In 18, it wasn't in the budget, and here we are in 19. I don't know what the wind down is, if there's anybody in place, but this is a citizens commission. There's nothing to prevent the citizens from continuing their activity on their own endeavor. I believe that they would be doing it anyway. And there is a lot of voices in Alaska that weigh in. You can get online and do all the research you want very easily. If there's no staff there, we're going to have to reconstitute it. And, you know, a citizen advisory, there's people all over the state having their organizations do very similar work from very different aspects of it, having the state foster and support a citizen advisory when others are doing the same thing without funding like this is inappropriate.
Thank you. Further comments from the committee? Representative Wilson.
So, and this is not a question, so it's just a comment. So, basically, this amendment gives us an option of basically leaving $400,000+ as another fund to be used as needed, or we could actually put it to a purpose that we know that Alaskans are very concerned about. I do know the structure is still in place, but they've had to find funds, and they can't be as detailed in what we want them to be in the way that they're going right now, but there are ones who have found it very important to make sure that we're watching the overreach part of this. I probably would not have supported this amendment if it was being utilized and we were taking money or firing someone, which we've heard that we're not. We also have a backup plans because we have a contingency fund that could be used for this if the governor so chose to. So it's not like we are leaving them high and dry, but yet we are saying this is a priority and it's something that we need to take care of, and I am in support of this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can anybody here tell me when did the Citizens Advisory Group on Federal Lands, how long had it been in the budget previous to the 2017?
It was Mike Kelly. It was 2009. I can answer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it was Representative Mike Kelly, who is a member of this Finance Committee, who put it in 2009.
In 2009.
It was reinstated in 2009.
Thank you. Representative Kawasaki for that information. So from 2009 until 2017, when it didn't appear in the budget, was it the governor who removed it from the budget in 2017?
Mr. Chair, to the representative, I'm uncertain. I know that the appropriation has been dormant since 2016, and I know that the funding at that stage was $262,000 of the general fund, but it has been dormant since 16. I couldn't really address when it your specific question.
Are further comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to oppose this amendment, but I wanted to use my time just to say that, you know, the Office of the Governor and the Arctic Policy. Oh, wait, before you leave, I wanted to say that these are three individuals, young Alaskans, representing the Alaska Youth for Environmental Action, and they're very concerned with the things that go on in Washington, D.C. I think this is an appropriate use of state money when it comes to the governor's office being able to advocate for Arctic policy and economic development projects, and one of the reasons why they're here is this exact reason. Thanks for being here.
Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we heard earlier from Representative Wilson that if this project, which the money is sitting in right now, is, as you said, Mr. Kawasaki, a good use of the funds, but we did hear that there is an alternate funding source that we could use to fund the Citizens Advisory Group on federal lands, and I think that hearing from our citizens and watching federal overreach is something which not only is the state of Alaska, but a lot of the states across the U.S. are very concerned about overreach. And I know that, you know, when you're looking at regulations to deal with hunting and fishing and all of those things, I think it's very important that we listen to the citizens and what they are offering back to us. And as we've already pointed out, there is an additional funding source that could be used. So I'm very much in support of this amendment.
Thank you. Further comments? I will just say that I'm opposing this amendment for two reasons. The first reason is that the Arctic Policy Leadership and Economic Development projects are extremely important. And I think that we need to be focusing on that and adaptations to climate change that we're seeing. And the other reason is I think that CAFCA was probably a slush fund for use in the most ineffective way I've ever seen. And so the reactivating putting state money in a large proportion into a private effort that has no function to accomplish anything other than to talk to us is not something I support. And so I'm going to oppose the amendment and in wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I believe that one of the members of the Arctic leadership team is from Seattle. And in the same way that Alaskans don't appreciate Senator Cantwell telling us what to do, I don't think Alaskans would really appreciate someone from Seattle, I believe that's where they're from, dictating what Arctic policy should be. Instead, Arctic policy, which is a federal issue, and it should be, shouldn't it also be part of a discussion from a citizens group? I think the member next to me just pointed out three citizens that were here today. They weren't paid for by this Arctic policy group, but they're here because they have concerns about the environment. They have concerns about federal issues. So why wouldn't we want the citizens to be a part of a group that can talk about federal areas? Instead, we've got an organization, a group that has been put together that includes people from outside of Alaska that are here to tell us what we should be then telling the feds is the best thing for Alaska. I also would like to say that, yes, we do have members of our federal delegation that are in D.C. fighting for us on issues. But how do they know to fight for the issues? They kind of live in D.C. these days. They hear from the citizens of Alaska who might tell them about concerns they have over federal issues, including federal lands and federal areas. So if recognizing that we've got people in D.C. that need to know what's going on, and recognizing that the Arctic policy is a citizens' issue, I don't understand why we need a totally separate organization with people from outside of Alaska, when we have a group that has worked in the past and actually had some very active individuals that are citizens advising us and advising the federal government on what to do in federal areas. I guess that's the part that surprises me is we don't want the citizens to participate. We'd rather pay people that may not live in Alaska So I would ask for your support. I think this is actually fairly reasonable. I don't think this is kind of outside of anything too extraordinary. We did spread it over a couple years. I appreciate your support on that because it gives them the effort to continue their effort, not just over 1 year, but over the course of several years. So with that, I would ask for your support and ensuring that the citizens can continue to have a conversation about what to do on federal areas. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Secretary, would you call the roll?
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Tilton.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Guerra.
No.
Representative Grant.
No.
Representative Gettenberg.
No.
Representative Kawasaki.
No.
Representative Ortiz.
No.
Representative Pruitt.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Seaton.
No.
4 yeas, 7 nays.
So a vote of 4 in favor and 7 opposed, SAP 26 fails to be adopted. Now we'll go to House Judiciary 4, which is on page 51 of Ledge Finance Packet.
51?
Page 51.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I move House Judiciary Amendment Number 4.
Object for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've worked with the court system. Obviously, I think they've been doing a good job at cost containment for a constitutional function that they perform. They, in losing money to inflation and budget cuts over the last few years, have empty positions they don't foresee filling in this budget climate, or at least in the next few years. And so we identified 16 positions. The court system agrees. They're unfunded and that are unlikely to be funded in the next few years.
Wait. Further question, discussion, objection maintained?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Objection been removed. So we have House Judiciary 4 has been adopted. We'll now go to HUA, University of Alaska 3, which is on page 50. And I will move language amendment HUOA 3.
Object.
There's an objection. This amendment adds $499,500 for FY19 and 20 for research to be conducted by the Institute of Circumpolar Health Studies to establish a baseline for prenatal and newborn vitamin D levels for Alaska women and children to determine the prevalence of vitamin D. The prevalence of vitamin D deficiency among pregnant women and newborns, and to consider whether the prenatal and vitamin D screenings and supplemental guidelines should be modified for Alaska women and children. Is there any discussion? Representative Wilson.
So do we have somebody here from the Institute for Circumpolar Health Studies?
We have online, I believe, Jesse. Mr. Jesse, are you online?
Is he part of that group?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Jeff Jesse. I'm here.
Would you identify yourself and who you're representing for the record, and then we'll get a question for you.
Yes, this is Jeff Jesse. I'm Dean of the College of Health and Vice Provost for Health Programs at the University of Alaska, Anchorage.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
So my question is, so how do you even begin establishing a baseline for prenatal and newborns for anything, not just necessarily vitamin D?
Well, Representative Wilson, through the chair, it's a matter of taking blood samples and having them analyzed and then gathering those together and starting to look at, well, what are these values for vitamin D in the blood system, both of the mothers and the newborns. One of the advantages of this particular study is you can get the newborn vitamin D levels through a umbilical cord draw, so you don't have to stick the baby, basically.
Follow-up?
Representative Wilson.
So has any study like this been done in the United States on women and children and vitamin D?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, not to my knowledge. There may have been some studies in the rest of the United States, but certainly none done in an Arctic or near Arctic geographic area.
So follow up.
Representative Wilson, and I will note that there are the four-page supporting documents with the in your packet from the Institute of Circumpolar Health Studies, University of Anchorage, and that is with the proposed research project. And I'll just note for the record that this is commonly done in different places around the world to do research on. It's not normally done in just as a matter of course during the birth process, but there's been a number of studies around the world that have looked at vitamin D levels in cord blood and in pregnant mothers, and that's how we have a lot of the data that we have, that if you have low vitamin D during pregnancy, you have four times the level of moderate to severe language impairment at age five going into school. That's a study that came out of Australia. You have the studies that have been done looking at the autism rates, and that we could probably prevent two-thirds or three-quarters of all autism cases if we had adequate levels of vitamin D during pregnancy and first year of life. And so we can provide all those studies for you right down the hall, Representative Wilson, if you want to look at them. And the reason for this being put forward is we have a severe amount of health costs that are being taken up, and we've talked about this before. Last year we showed that between $300 and $500 million could be saved annually in health care, not just in prenatal and kids, but we have the studies that will show you infant wheeze and asthma, and all those rates are much less. So be happy to provide those studies to you.
Well, I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman, and you kind of answered my question, because it sounds like the data is already there, and that's really where I'm asking, because this is to do a study, and it sounds like there's already from information you just gave me and information I've gotten from you before on other issues and vitamin D, that there is a lot out there on that. So I just guess I don't know why we're going to spend almost $500,000 to study what we seem to already know.
And Representative Wilson, I would almost agree with you, except that in 2011, we proposed a voluntary study across the state, sampling on a voluntary basis all of the newborns, which would be about 10,000 newborns. The Department of Health at that time said they don't do research in Alaska, and if you look at the epidemiology bulletin that's on your desk, that was bulletin number 27 from November 1st, 2016, you'll see the study that was done, and in the upper right-hand column, you'll see that they say that data from these studies suggest that vitamin D deficiency appears to be highly prevalent in Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta prenatal women, and that while current evidence does not support routine vitamin D screening and supplementation for prenatal women on a national level, such screening and supplementation appears to be warranted in the YKD, Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. So the Department of Health and Social Services is admitting that we need to worry about this problem in Alaskan, but they're only identifying that the only population that has been studied is Native women in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta population. So all of the other people across Alaska, we're the only Arctic state, 90% of all vitamin D that Americans get comes through their sun exposure skin to their skin and their own production of vitamin D. For 7 months out of the year, you don't produce any in Alaska. So as you can see by the epidemiology bulletin, the problem is that we have a health department that says until the federal government that tells us that we should treat Alaskans the way we treat people in Florida and Southern California, that's recommendations made for down there, the only ones they're willing to address are the deficiency that they see highly prevalent in Yukon, Kuskokwim, Delta women. And so the department, our chief medical officer has testified that he doesn't want to take any actions until he sees research on Alaskans. And so all of the people in Anchorage and in Fairbanks, all of those babies that are born vitamin D deficient are untreated, unknown, and with all the consequences that comes from that, because they don't have a study on the general population of Alaska newborn women and newborns and the mothers. So until we have a study, we are going to continue this huge amount of cost through our medical system. And remember, half of all the babies that are born are born under Medicaid. And so that's about 5,000 a year. And the greatest proportion of those are deficient in vitamin D and all the health consequences that comes from that. So going from the testimony of the chief medical officer, we have to have Alaskan research on Alaskans in different parts of our state before they will agree to address this highly cost medical measure. And so that's what this will provide us, is the actual research on Alaskans, so that the Department of Health and Social Services will actually start saving us the money by preventing this avoidable condition. And Representative Wilson.
So if I understand you correctly, and it's been a while since I've had children, but you're telling me that if I took my child to a pediatrician and had any kind of concerns, that without this study, they couldn't do testing to see if vitamin D or vitamin A or whatever deficiencies are there, or my obstetrician wouldn't do the same thing for me, they would not be able to prescribe vitamin D without the study happening.
Representative Wells, I'm not telling you that any particular doctor wouldn't do this. I'm telling you doctors in general. Most of our doctors went to medical school 30 years ago and never had a class in any innate immunology. Some of them are up on things, and most, half of the babies are born under Medicaid. Most of them don't have a pediatrician. And if you don't realize that, we have a huge segment of our population that is vitamin D deficient, as you know, and the women the same way. And until we have data that we'll have the health department come in and identify that all of the Alaska populations that need this, they've only identified, because there is one study that was done by the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation that got significant results and showed that, oh, gee, we may need to treat this population, though the preventative medicine group in Washington, D.C. says that, well, we don't have to treat all women in, across the United States, and so we have had a refusal to look at the only Arctic state as a unit that may need something more than what they need in Southern California. And so, yes, we have a problem. And this is, if they won't address it until there's research, this is the research that will give them the information to save us a lot of money.
So do we have anybody from Medicaid here? Because I'm really disturbed that if we have Denali Kid Care and nobody ever sees a pediatrician, that is not my understanding. I can't imagine that we're having children born and they're going their entire childhood without seeing a pediatrician. But I would just like to find out whether or not there's anything that prevents pediatricians from doing these kind of testing and then giving the Medicaid, giving the vitamins that they need to. That's a much bigger problem than just doing one study. So I'll let somebody else go, but if somebody is listening to this and they represent Medicaid, if you could call in, I'd greatly appreciate it.
And you should, Representative, you should realize that we're talking about neonatals. In other words, those before they're born, so it's not, well, so they'll never see.
I'm pretty sure that you go to an obstetrician before you need a pediatrician. It's been a while, but I'm still sure that that's the way you go. And
and then Representative Ortiz.
Thanks, Chair. Not an expert on a lot, but what I do know from working with a lot of youth and people who have very little in their lives and who are on Medicaid is, despite many of our efforts, a lot of people without money don't have a regular doctor. They go in when there's an emergency. A mother will go in when there's a birth, but in a lot of communities there aren't the physician and medical services. So just on the question of doesn't everybody have a pediatrician, I think ideally it would be great, but everybody doesn't have a regular family doctor. So it's just the reality of the world for folks without a lot of money.
Representative Ortiz and then Graham.
Just in a quick follow-up. It's fairly common in rural Alaska that you don't have access to an OB. That's fairly common in rural Alaska, which is just a record. Thank you.
Representative Graham.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I want to acknowledge your co-chair's passion for the subject. It's obviously well known in the building. And I agree with and have learned a lot from the studies that have been passed out, the epidemiology report, the studies from Scandinavian countries that have done this, who see the impacts of vitamin D within their citizens, the need for this, obviously the difference between in our history of the people in Alaska from before we were a state, our early years of statehood to now, and the differences in the vitamin D levels of the people who live here based on their dietary habits. You've shined a light on many different other health reasons why what vitamin D, how it's important, and what the deficiency means. This amendment doesn't change who has a pediatrician and who doesn't. This amendment asks for $500,000 to research something that, even though we think we know, we need a specific study in our state to move forward, which is concerning. I'd rather see us spend $500,000 on bottles of vitamin D. You could probably buy 50,000 of them and pass them out to our 10,000 new babies for 5 years. I mean, it's incredible that we need something like this to move forward. And so that I think that's probably what's most concerning for this amendment. But I did want to acknowledge that this is not something if we ignore it, we pay a cost to it. There might be a larger issue to talk about when we talk about this amendment. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So first, a couple of things. One, I think this is probably more categorized like a capital expenditure. We're putting in an operating budget, and I think it's more of an intent is it's a kind of a one-time over 2 years to expend this money. So that's in terms of the process, I think that's important to highlight. Also think that one of the concerns that I had when we started to identify the ACHI fund and some of the other loan funds was that what was going to happen is we were going to have these, the opportunity for things that each of us might be passionate about. Say, hey, there's money, and let's grab the money. I think we see Achi funds being utilized here, and concern, you know, there would be while it's still in health, it's we could continue to use some of these funds, kind of the fund du jour, and drain those. And so we should be cognizant of the long-term effect of just of grabbing, not just related to this amendment, but just in general of going and finding funds and just starting to strip them out and put them for kind of one-time use or temporary use. But here's the real thing that about this one that kind of makes me that I guess I'm scratching my head a little bit. You have talked about this a lot over the last few years. I mean, so much so that the member from Anchorage has a bottle right in front of him right now, and he keeps it in front of him. The various departments, as they were testifying, they were including it in their slides. They were ensuring that it was a part of their presentation. And I guess the point that I'm trying to figure out here is, if the studies needed for the feds to understand this, what difference will it create if they know that our people are deficient? They'll need more vitamin D. We know that they need vitamin D. But unless they're going to create a new program within Medicaid that potentially, I guess, gives everyone vitamin D, or gives all pregnant women vitamin D, or something to that, how does this actually, what is the end result of the study allow Medicaid to do, short of, I mean, because, and I can't think of another way to get more vitamin D other than standing in the sun or taking vitamins. And since we can't stand in the sun, you're going to have to take vitamins or eat fish or certain foods high in those types of, and high in vitamin D. So what would be the end result and the benefit that would come from the expenditure? And that's a question that I'd love to have answered.
And thank you for that question. First of all, although half of the babies are born under Medicaid, this isn't a changing of federal program. This is the state guidelines and the state standards of what should be done. And currently what we have is a situation in which the state guidelines are the national guidelines, and those guidelines are for the lower 48. I mean, they really don't measure many people in Alaska, but it just spreads across, and we have a department that has adopted these national standards that say, gee, most women get enough sun exposure, and so during pregnancies they make enough vitamin D that they can provide the vitamin D for their growing baby. And so here we are, the only Arctic state, and we have a health department that said, we're just going to follow these guidelines that are applicable in Florida and Southern California and Kansas and every place else. And that's where we're at. So now they've changed that with the one study that they've done, but they've only changed that guideline saying we should test and supplement babies on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, and so all of the babies that are born in Anchorage are under guidelines that say you don't need to test and you don't need to supplement women when they're pregnant. And so we have a huge medical cost that's accruing to the state of Alaska because our guidelines are inappropriately set for our state, and they're set for another state. And or they're set for the broad breadth of the United States. And we'll be brief at ease. So at this time, we're going to adjourn today's meeting, and we'll pick you back up tomorrow. We will have bills tomorrow, and so our next meeting will be at 1:30 tomorrow afternoon, where we will be taking up also HB 267, release of hunting and fishing records to munis, and we'll gavel out at this time.